Hello, welcome to The Debate. I'm Kobe Tahwey. The UK Parliament will be voting for backing or rejecting Prime Minister Theresa May's Brexit deal. Many of the parliamentarians are not behind May on this, since they believe that the UK did not get the best deal from the EU. Well, in this edition of The Debate, we will look at what the different outcomes would mean for the UK and whether the UK Prime Minister is out of cards to play, risking her premiership as a result. Now, before we start the topic, let's cross on over to London, where Press TV's Roshan Mohammed Saleh is standing by to share with us his thoughts about the prospect of the vote. Roshan, the fate of Brexit is on the line. Will it be rejected or approved, do you think?
I think all the predictions, Kaveh, is that her deal will be rejected. She is due to address Parliament any moment now, and they will start voting. MPs will start voting at about 7 p.m. There are some amendments to the deal which need to be voted upon before there is that vote on the withdrawal agreement from the European Union itself. So we're expecting a result sometime after 8 p.m., perhaps 8:30 latest. It's quite a febrile atmosphere here in Westminster. Very, very lively indeed. We have pro-Remain protesters and pro Brexit protesters vying off with each other, facing off with each other rather, in a sometimes volatile invective. We have MPs due to decide on this vote. No one knows exactly which way it's going to go, but it's predicted that Theresa May will lose by about 80 to 100 votes, because at least 100 of her own MPs are predicted to vote against her, as the Labour Party, the Scottish National Party, the Irish Party, the DUP, who are actually Theresa May's allies. So it's not looking good. It's unprecedented, in fact, in British history that a Prime Minister and a government are actually calling a parliamentary vote, which they're pretty sure they're going to lose. And the speculation is, why are they going to do that? What's going to happen next? And most people are speculating that Theresa May will actually not give up on this deal, even though it's probably going to be defeated tonight. She'll come back in 3 days' time after perhaps visiting Brussels and European Union leaders with essentially the same deal on the table. Daring MPs, as the clock ticks down to that 29th of March deadline when Britain is due to leave the European Union, daring them to vote it down again and again in the hope that they will face the reality of a no-Brexit deal or a no-Brexit at all, which would be catastrophic for this country economically and perhaps for its democracy. So, and the final thing I would say is that from the opposition's perspective, they want to try and trigger a general election. So Jeremy Corbyn, he's already been in discussions, kind of lengthy discussions with the Speaker of the House just a few moments ago, and people are already speculating that maybe, just maybe, he is planning to put a no-confidence motion in tonight against the government in the hope of triggering a general election. And also there are some people who also want a second referendum on Brexit as well.
Thank you for that roundup. Really appreciate it. Roshan Mohammed Saleh there from London. Joining us for this debate, we have economist and political commentator Marco Pietropoli, who joins us from Rome. And we also have journalist and political commentator Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, who joins us from London. Gentlemen, welcome, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas. We're part of history here, I believe. So let me start out with a quote and tell me what you think about what May said just 24 hours ago, maybe a little bit more. She said, "No, it is not perfect, and yes, it is a compromise, but I say we should deliver it for the British people and get on with building a brighter future for our country." Did she sell you on Brexit?
The truth is, this is Brexit without the exit. That's what a lot of the analysts are saying that are certainly of my school of, if you like, economics. The bottom line is that Britain has entered into an absolute farcical, if you like, situation where they're having to, you know, bumble around at the last minute of the 11th hour to work out what their economic future is and where they stand in terms of their sort of political economy. It's a big gamble that was played. But in reality, what's really interesting is that the City of London and the Corporation of London and the people who are running the financial, if you like, industries are behaving in a very calm and very relaxed manner. The City of London and, if you like, the financial services are a good indicator, because they basically account for around 20% of the British GDP. So something like 72 billion pounds worth of
taxes go into the government's coffers as a result of this particular segment of British industry. But they're not terribly perturbed. They seem to feel that it's going to be business as usual, more or less, regardless of what really happens either way. So I'm not sure. Is this all really political drama that's being played out? And in reality, actually, not much will really change. It's clear that there were pros and cons. Being part of the EU does take away, if you like, political power from Westminster. There was not a great deal of accountability in terms of the EU from a political and a democratic perspective, from a British citizen's point of view. So there were many arguments politically. Economically, I think that there's a much ado about nothing, to be honest.
Much to do about nothing. What do you think, Marco Pietropoli, as I'm looking at one of the headlines that says MPs told they face a choice between order and chaos?
Sorry, you were breaking up then a little bit. It's me to speak. I think it has been chaos, really, since what was a very unexpected result in the referendum. And over a lot of discussions, very little concrete has actually been put together of what Britain wants to be and what kind of relationship there should be between Europe and Britain. The Europeans were never going to be very favourable with anybody who wanted to leave. Obviously, it's not in the interest of the group to give preferential treatment to anybody who wants to leave. Equally, May had a pretty weak hand in that she was part of the Remain camp and then ended up with much less of a majority and therefore made the whole negotiations process very difficult from the outset. The problem about any referendum, of course, it is a snapshot in time of people's mood. That mood can change. Those that obviously want to remain, maybe the tactic is to try and delay and keep delaying, trying to explain to everybody how difficult life would be if a real Brexit happens, delaying it and eventually having another referendum. Maybe that is the tactic of some of the Europeans, including some of our politicians.
Trying to figure out what is going on inside Parliament here, Mohsen Abbas. I mean, we're looking at, of course, the opposition, Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn, who is set that he's going to go for a no-confidence motion for a change of administration if parliamentarians don't support May. But then, you know, when you look at what happened just recently, where May survived that no-confidence vote within the Conservative Party, I mean, do you think that May has... Because everyone says that she's not going to get it. It's going to get rejected. How do parliamentarians stand on this, based on how you see it?
Well, obviously, I think she's clearly going to lose. Sorry, I'm getting a little bit of feedback. But yeah, I think she's clearly going to lose the vote today. She's got major divisions, the Irish MPs who gave her the swing vote, the swing towards being able to even establish a government in this last election. They're against her. The Scottish MPs, by and large, don't want to leave Europe. The Labour Party itself is kind of going to vote against her. So she's clearly going to lose today. There's a lot of political game playing going on, of course, because Jeremy Corbyn himself is quite happy with, obviously, getting out of Europe himself. But they want to obviously make as much capital from Theresa and the Tories kind of divisions as possible. They want to use this opportunity to basically call an election, win the election and come to power. Ultimately, how does all that affect Brexit? It doesn't really. That's the policy. politics that's going on, which is all based on deep divisions which are rising within British politics and the British public in general. The right wing is gathering pace, more and more sort of indications of fascism emerging. The left wing is becoming more and more volatile in its own way against the austerity measures, and there is unrest there because of the economic hardships which the Tories have posed on the British public. All of this is very interesting, but underlying it, I don't see a great deal of threat to the real economics of the country. If there was, I'd be seeing a lot of stirring within the City of London and the people who are running the big business side of things.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because that's, I believe, the second time at least that you've mentioned that, say, Mohsen Abbas. Marco Pietropoli, I mean, what are we looking at economically speaking? Our guest there indicates that, you know, not much is going to change, citing 20% of London in terms of the financial aspect of it is what it contributes. I mean, there was a lot of talk prior up to this point about how this is going to shake the UK up. If you can briefly, in layman's term, tell us whether the economy is going to suffer and to what degree.
I think if there's a hard Brexit, we could can expect a short-term shock, certainly, as things settle into some kind of new regime. The full problem we've got at the moment is that we're not quite sure exactly what that regime will be, and therefore it's very difficult for anybody to plan. So it would be far clearer in many ways if the government had really planned for a hard Brexit and explained to everybody how we're going to do it and what steps are going to be taken, as well as pursuing some kind of deal. Yes, there has to be a short-term shock when there'll be a readjustment. How things move on from there will largely depend on how quickly we are able, as an individual country, to do deals with other economic powers in the world to try and stimulate trade that way. With regards to the trade with Europe, it's in everybody's interest to obviously keep that going without too much disruption. There are millions of British people living in Europe, and millions of Europeans living and working in the UK, and a huge amount of travel going back and forth between the UK and Europe. You can't just suddenly close everything down and stop everything from functioning. So it may not be an immediate shock in terms of transport and that kind of thing, but economically we can expect some kind of shock, especially if there is a hard Brexit.
Okay, I know this subject has been thrown about quite a bit, say Mohsen Abbas, but I'm going to ask you what you think should be done. There were a number of opinions that we got from the people there on the streets in the UK, next to Westminster, when our reporter got that for us. And a couple of them said that, you know, we should go for another referendum. And one of the people that was interviewed said that a lot of people who voted to leave have changed their mind. You are in London. How do you see it? Do people want another referendum? What option do you think most people want? Do you have a feel on that?
Well, I think that it's very hard to say on the street, but generally people are very nervous about Brexit. I think a lot of people have realised that the people who were fighting for Brexit, the Boris Johnsons of the world and the Michael Goves of the world, lied. They did blatantly lie about the financial and economic benefits of leaving the EU. That's a fact. That's an absolute reality which has been exposed time and time again. There haven't emerged any clear benefits from leaving the EU economically, that's for sure, in the post sort of referendum era. And I think that people have kind of realized that it's not as cut and dry. So yes, the statistics on the ground, also from a lot of the YouGov polls and other polls that have been taken, do indicate that if there was a referendum again today, that actually the Remainers would probably win. The Lib Dem party and other political elements that I mentioned earlier are obviously still very much much in that sort of remaining camp as well, and they're arguing for that. Indeed, there's been a cross-party set of parliamentarians who've actually drafted an entire plan for a second referendum. However, I think it's unlikely. It really has been something which I think somehow has been squashed. The media hasn't really captured it. They've not been pushing that agenda. The City of London or the economic big guns haven't been pushing that agenda. Most of the political circle here haven't pushed that agenda. So I rather doubt there's going to be a second referendum at any cost. Even if Theresa May can't get any kind of deal done or ratified by Parliament, I still think that the idea of the referendum happening again is probably a long way off.
We have to talk a little bit more about the EU and the way that it actually made its posturing here, Marco Pietropoli. I mean, I'm sure you have the same idea as many do, that the EU really obviously did not want this to happen, A, and B, that at this point, the deal that is offered May is the final deal. Our correspondent in London, in the beginning of the program, said that even if this deal that May has doesn't get the backing, she's going to say, I'm going to go back to the EU. Don't you think her going back to the EU decreases her strength as a prime minister and in a way is shaming herself, knowing that the EU is not going to give her anything? And plus, clarifications have already been made.
Well, I think for many respects, she has to be seen to doing her best. I think that the whole post-referendum organisation has been a bit of a shambles. It would seem far more logical to me for someone who wanted Brexit to actually lead the negotiation and lead the country into Brexit. It seems odd to me that such a weak negotiating position has been allowed to take place. I think the Europeans, as I said, don't want to give anything special to Britain. And it's not in their interests if they want to try and maintain the European Union moving forward. So she will have to do her best, show that she's done her best, and then it will need to be for her own party or for Parliament or indeed for another general election to see what to do next and who to elect to run the country.
Well, we have here a statement, Sayyid Mohsen Abbas, that in a private meeting Theresa May told the Tory lawmakers, she said that passing her deal was the best way to prevent Jeremy Corbyn from becoming prime minister. Is there something wrong with Corbyn becoming prime minister?
Well, quite clearly, politics is being played. I mean, the fact of the matter is that all the parties are playing politics. They don't want Jeremy Corbyn to come in. I wouldn't have thought the status quo hierarchy, the structural elite in and around Britain, I doubt if they want Jeremy Corbyn to come to power. If he was to go to the elections today, there is a strong chance that he might well come to power. So they're going to probably do everything they can to avoid this kind of, if you like, collapse in their own sort of control and power. So they probably will come to an agreement at the end of the day with their own leader. That's the Tory party I'm talking about. But the broader context is also very important. What's happening to Britain as a result of all this Brexit? On the one hand, yes, there's this political drama and this political theatre that's being played out. But on a deeper level, there are huge divisions and frictions that are being whipped up as a result of this. You see, at the heart of Brexit arguably laid immigration as an issue. And immigration is such a volatile issue in terms of islanders, which the British are, and they actually have, many of them have bought into this kind of revival of almost sort of British colonialist, British, if you like, islander mentality, where actually they don't fancy immigrants coming into the country, and that's still driving a lot of the political opinion as well. So this shift to the right in terms of the politics of Britain, this is far more dangerous. And the divisions between the Scots and the English, this is another sort of, if you like, fissure, which hadn't existed really on the scale that it does today. And more broadly speaking, is it that the structural elite and those who control wealth in the world have decided that Westerners generally, the Europeans and the Brits, have had their day? And actually, is it time to scale down the economies of the West by creating economic and political instability? And you can do that by pulling these kind of stunts, which is exactly what I think Brexit is. So there are much bigger issues going on about the status of Europe and the West as economic powers on the global stage in relation to the rise of China, the rise of India, and the investment of a lot of the big transnational corporations in those parts of the world which look like they're the up-and-coming economic superpowers of the future.
So in that respect, there was a recent report, actually, Marco Piotropoli, saying that the U.S. is going to fall behind and China's going to be number one. I think India, number two, by the year 2030, I think, was the year given. So based on what our guest there in London said, not a big deal to not be part of the European Union, is it?
We'll find out. Many of the economic powers in the world, namely some of the ones that have just been mentioned, the US, China, India, Japan, they're not part of the European Union and historically have done pretty well over the centuries. So the European Union is a relatively recent institution that has been created post the Second World War. There's been trading before the European Union existed, and there will be trading after the European Union existed and during. We don't know how long this union will last, we can only expect. But trading will always happen, and business will always happen. And there is the power struggles between those who run things, especially those Europeans who have invested a huge amount of time in creating these political structures. And obviously they want to maintain the status quo. There's been a huge amount of negative talk, and therefore people are obviously worried about the fact that the future is unknown, and people always tend to prefer the status quo, apart from the occasional referendum. The problems with referendums is that if you have them too often on the same thing to try and change the vote, then it devalues the whole point of having a referendum in the first place.
Okay.
So need to be careful regards to ongoing referendums on the same issue, I think.
So, Monsignor Abbas, final question to you. Theresa May losing it tonight, should she throw her hat in? Because then she doesn't really have the support from her fellow peers on this when it comes to the final say. Or should she continue along this path?
Well, she is a part of a disreputable establishment, one which is exploiting the poorest and the weakest in Britain. I don't think that there's any love lost between my kind of school of, if you like, political activism and the likes of the Tories. They always stand up for the elites and the rich. They have devastated the welfare system here. They're devastating the NHS. They're devastating the education system. They've done nothing that's right. But there again, Tony Blair, who was from the same neoliberal stable as Margaret Thatcher and as Theresa May, didn't do much better. So what Britain really needs is leaders who've got genuine compassion, who are realists, and who can actually devolve power more and more to the people, not to the elitists who run the square mile in the City of London, not those who control the affairs of Britain from tax havens around the world, and the likes of large transnational corporations which get away without paying any taxes and without really contributing to this society. In fact, I think the whole world has to deglobalize, and they have to become more and more accountable to individual smaller, if you like, political institutions, and the economies have to be rolled back from this kind of grab and growth and debt-ridden, okay, usury-based, if you like, exploitation,
right,
of the people and their wealth.
Thank you. We're going to have to end it there. Economist and political commentator Marco Pietropoli spoke to us from Rome, journalist and political commentator Said Mohsen Abbas. Thank you from London. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate from Mikhail Tahwai. It's goodbye until the next program.